number of years ago, I was working with, well, today you call it Youth Unlimited. It was called Youth for Christ back then in the city of Hamilton. And every April we would do a fundraiser. We'd bring in some music and, you know. Anyway, we had some friends I had gone to school with. And he was a diabetic, a severe one. But just about a week before we had our banquet, he went blind all of a sudden, just, and he couldn't see. And I had heard about it, and I really felt bad. I didn't have a chance to even talk to them or anything. But as the banquet is about to, you know, people are coming into it, and I'm kind of on the street beside the venue just saying hi to people. And I saw them coming along. And I said, oh, okay. And, he, you know, they're walking slowly, and he's holding onto her arm. And I said, hi, guys, I'm really glad to see you. You know, not knowing what to say at that particular moment. And, you know, that they were kind of gruff, and, you know, I said, oh, okay. So they went in and sat down, and then, anyway, years later, after he's actually an incredible guy. You could hire him for electrical. He actually changed. He's blind. He went up a ladder and changed the light fixture. Now that's better than some professional guys that I know. But, but we're not going to go there. He went home to be with the Lord. He had a great testimony. But I remember once sitting at a kind of a reunion for the school, and she was there. And 2 years in a row, she brought up the fact that when he went blind, they went to this banquet, and nobody wanted to sit with them. Well, I think she might have been exaggerating a little bit, but the other part, she was probably right, because you know, when you go into a banquet like this, it's kind of a celebration. And you don't want to sit beside people who are, and rightly so, you know, really ticked off, you know, really angry. But that happens. You know people. You know, you've probably met people where, you know, that's happened. Or you met somebody who maybe lost their job, you know, and they're angry. And you're not really too sure what to say. You know, we all have our cliches, and you know, and I'm going to tell you a little bit later that they stink. but it happens. Or even someone who loses a child. I saw a picture of a young boy yesterday. I was just on a website of a church in Hamilton. I was just wondering, you know, who was on staff and so on, And the senior pastor was actually an associate at the time, but his son was 13, was hit by a car at a crosswalk and killed. You know, and I was reminded of that. And so, you know, we see that people go through those things. The other big one, and in fact, Bev Rose, I saw an email from her today, and asking for prayer. She and her sister are going to be talking to her mom again about going into long-term care. Now, those are war words. You know, and you know, some of you have probably been through that. And now pretty soon you're probably going to be at the other end of it. You know, because your daughter's going to come up to you and say, "Hey, mommy, remember with grandma?" You know, and so it happens, but. You know, the world is caving in. You know, you've lost your ability to do stuff, and you can't do it. And you're gonna, you know, you've got these ideas of these nursing homes. You know, it's like Dungeon and Crown. You know, you know, it's like, I mean, you know, nobody likes it. You know, it's awful. Even my own mom, who actually instigated the initial steps to go into long-term care, when it was time for her to go, you know, I said, Mom, you gotta go. You just can't have that apartment. You know, it's costing you too much money. I've got money. Now, my parents were missionaries, okay? And I figured, you know, if we could go out for, you know, for McDonald's or something after the funeral, you know, on Mom, you know, because, you know, they didn't have a lot of money. I knew that, you know. Well, I've got money, she says. I says, where? You know, my things kind of lit up a bit. And, but she did go in, and everything worked out. But, you know, those things happen, you know. And one of the things that also, you know, in these circumstances is when it happens to one person, they're not in it alone. They're not in it alone because there's usually a spouse, you know, who has to sit there and, you know, and kind of balance everything out. They're going through, you know, through the heartache as well. And so when we look in the book of Job, some people call it Job, but that's not right. It's Job. Job is the oldest book in the Bible. Did you know that? And Job was also an extremely, extremely wealthy man. I mean, if they had a men's fellowship, we'd be going to the Job Ranch for men's fellowship. It was that. I mean, he had thousands of head of sheep and camels and oxen and horses and, you know, I don't know how many thousands of acres of land. And he also had a great family of 10 kids. And they were all well-behaved kids. You know, you wouldn't find a tattoo in any one of them, you know. And just a very godly family. And one day, God is in heaven, and the angels were kind of reporting to him, you know, almost like an Elon Musk in Washington, you know. And they were reporting what, you know, things. And he noticed Satan was there. And, you know, and he says, well, what are you doing, Satan? Oh, I'm just moving about the earth. Now, Peter warns us about that, remember? He roams like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. So he says, yeah, I'm just roaming. Well, oh, have you looked at my man, Job? And, no. Oh, Job's, he's godly, and God is just bragging about Job. Now, when I read that, it struck me. Does God brag about me? Did you think of that? Man, you know, I'm thinking, ooh, hey, what about Percy down there, you know? As long as he doesn't say Percy who, I'm okay. But you know what? Job is that kind of a man. And Satan says, oh, yeah. Yeah, he's holy and righteous because he's God. I mean, why wouldn't you be holy and righteous, you know, if you didn't own, you know, thousands of sheep and camels and, you know, 10 kids and all these acres, you know. Sure, you know, I'd be happy too. You know, because it's interesting how when people lose things, how they suddenly change their excitement for the Lord. And so in their conversation, God says, okay, you can test them. That's why I'm glad God doesn't brag about me, because it's those testing that scares me. But he says, you can test them. But, you know, you have a limit of what you can do. And so the first thing he did, Satan did, was somehow the enemy came and took all his cattle and so on. So he lost all that. And then there was some kind of a hurricane or something that came and tore down his house while all his kids were inside and they all were killed. But he remained faithful to God. He remained true to God. Satan came back and said, well, you know, that's because you didn't touch him. He said, okay, fine, I'll let you touch him, but you can't take his life. So then we get into the real interesting, you know, part of this whole thing is he ends up with boils, and he's in the garbage dump, and he gets little pieces of clay, and he's scraping his boils. Now the garbage dump is not like these are landfill. These places here back then would be called parkland, you know, what we have, you know. But there it was just, I mean, you know, dead things were thrown around, and it was an awful place, stunk. And he was scraping, you know, because he had this, you know, I mean, he had lost his kids, he lost everything. And then he had his wife, this dear wife. Now, everybody kind of gets mad at her because she's trying to tell him, why don't you just curse God and die? And Job never got on her. He was gracious to her. And one of the things I think couples need to understand, when you go through these life-changing experiences, you need to encourage, and you need to pray for, and you need to do whatever you can to help your spouse, whatever side of the, you know, of the event they're on. You know, they need to know that they're loved and they're cared for, and that God loves them. And sometimes when things happen like this, or when there's an accident and there's a loss of life, oftentimes couples divorce. And that's not what God really, really wants. Now, Job, he was, he just sat there and kind of scraped everything, and he was probably, he was just as low as you could ever go. And then something really interesting happened to him. Now, I remember as a young man, I used to love to watch hockey on Saturday night at 8 o'clock. And that's a long time ago, I know. And one year, Leaf captain George Armstrong, do you guys remember George Armstrong? Yeah. Chief, right? Yeah. Well, that's when men were men. Anyway, he was injured, and he ended up in the hospital, East General Hospital. And my friend Max, his mom, happened to be a nurse on the floor where George, the Chief Armstrong, lay. Where was, I don't know what he called it. I was hospitalized then anyway. So she got us to go up. We were able to go up, Max and I, and we waited outside his room, and I remember hearing her. She went in and said, "Oh, Mr. Armstrong, you've got some visitors." And in we walked. He says, "Hello, boys. How are you?" Oh, you know. And we made a little conversation, and then, you know, we kind of... But I still remember that. And so Job is sitting there in this, you know, having gone through all these things with his kids and his cattle and all that, and he's just devastated. He is just totally devastated. And he's scratching himself, you know. I've never had boils, but they're awful things, I hear. We used to see them a lot in Africa, but, you know, it's just awful. So his visitors decide to come. And I want to, no, we're not going to cover the whole conversation he had with his visitors. We will do that some other time in another message. You'll get part two. Now, these things just don't come off as regularly scheduled. So you're going to have to come to church every single Sunday for the rest of your life. Well, these three men, and they were a little older than he was. They lived, you know, a distance away from him, actually. They weren't like neighbors or good buddies or stuff like that. They were friends, and they hear about this, and so they make the arrangement that they want to go and see Job. So, you know, time passes, and you know, the news, you know, they were getting news of how things were going, and so on. And then there's a little bit of travel involved, so they're probably on donkeys or camels more than likely, and traveled together, you know, to find Job. And they went, you know, they went as soon as they could to be with him. You know, I remember years ago, we just got back from holidays, and I don't know, I might have been just in public school, I can't remember, it was either public school or early high school. And when we got home, my mom came out of the house quickly. We were unpacking the cup and stuff. And she says to my dad, you know, Doug Johnson had a stroke. Now, the Johnsons were very close, you know, friends of my parents. In fact, I mean, they were so close. They could just walk in the house without knocking. Do you have friends like that? You got those too? Boy, that bugged me as a kid. Mm-hmm. That used to bug me, you know. In fact, one day I was at home alone. I shouldn't tell you this because my mom might be listening. But they were out, and I saw Irene and Doug kind of pull up. So I, you know, the curtains were closed, fortunately. I locked the door, the front door, and I hid. And I hear this, hello there, hello? And I can hear her talking. I think I hear something. Well, I don't think so, you know. Anyway, they left and went home. I felt bad after, but and I never did tell my folks. But anyway, you know, these guys, you know, they heard, hey, here what happened to Job. Hey, we have to go, you know. And that's really nice, by the way, when you're in a situation like that, when people, you know, he'll come and visit you. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit. And those of you who came to visit me, I'm going to use you as illustrations. You guys may want to leave. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, so, you know, they arranged to get together, and they went to see Job. Now, their intent was to control and to comfort and consolidate and to sympathize with him. You know, I mean, they heard about the stories of the pain and the sores and all that happened to him, you know. And, you know, no one wants you to go and be a hero. You know, sometimes when we're going to go visit somebody who's, you know, in a real bad state, we, you know, we spend time trying to, well, what am I going to say? Well, relax. You know, well, why don't you just go and say hi? You know, and then, so that the day went, they, you know, they went, they got together, they must have talked about what they were going to do when they got there. And when they get there, Job's condition really affects them. Because they say, we're told that they saw him from a distance, and they began to weep and tear their robes and throw dust on their heads. And hopefully a lot of this was done away from Job, because that's probably not what he needed. But, you know, when you're with someone, don't go on and on and on about the situation and express your diagnosis. You know, be sad, but don't go with some, you know, and try to express sadness. Unless you have been there in their shoes, you really will never understand what it means. And basically, I don't really know what you're going through today, but I feel for you and I'm praying for you. It's just one of those things where, you know, we have to understand, how do we deal with people, you know, who are going through difficult experiences, who have a death in the family, a death of a spouse, a child, a financial crisis. You know, it's just a matter of going and seeing what condition they're in, and then moving from there. Because some people do not take this sort of thing very well. You know, some others, you know, they're great. You know, there's no problem. But we're all different, and you have to understand. You know, Lord, how do you want me to act? Now, we're told that when they got there, they didn't say anything. We're told they sat there with them in the garbage dump for 7 days. For 7 days, setting the time for mourning with him. And, you know, they saw how he was suffering. But they didn't say a thing. Isn't that incredible? That's pretty easy. You know, sometimes we think, when I go, I gotta find a verse nobody else knows. Well, you're never gonna find one of those. You know, I mean, come on. Or you feel that, well, what am I gonna say? I gotta, you know, because we all want the cliche, you know. We want some fancy little cliche that, oh, that's better than Solomon, you know. Sometimes we just can't do that. And in fact, I mean, I appreciated that those of you who were able to come see me in the hospital, because you really didn't say anything. And that's fine, you know. I had one of my parishioners say, Pastor, if I'm sick and you're coming, I don't want you to come and see me. That's great, write your name off, you know. But you know what? But you just come and say hi. And one of the problems I had, of course, when I was in, is it was winter time. And it's especially here at Chesley when I was there. People would come in, and you'd have the toque, you'd have your really heavy, you know, winter coat, and you'd wear a mask. How am I knows who you are? You know, I think you're just here to take my lunch. You know, like, who are you? You know, it's really kind of interesting. But these guys just didn't say a thing. You know, I remember some relatives, and they lost their son in a boating accident. And we were at the visitation, and they were very well known, and there was a huge line. We got in, and I went, you know, I went and saw the dad. I said, Tommy, I'm really sorry. He said, man, he looked at me, he said, you know what, Paul? I'm really getting sick and tired of Bible verses. I'm getting sick and tired of Bible. Now, he was a Christian. He's spiritual. They didn't like the Bible. I'm really tired of people just coming along and throwing a Bible verse at me. You know, and some of you may have experienced that. No, a lot of times, you know, people mean well, but the point is, you know, that it just, you know, they knew what to do. Joe Bailey was a great Christian leader, and he and his wife lost three of their children. One was 18 days old, and the other one was, I think, about five, and then one at 18. And Joe Bailey, you know, he wrote about this in a book called The Last Thing We Talked About. And in it, he says, I was sitting torn by grief. Someone came and talked to me of God's dealings, of why it happened, of hope beyond the grave. He talked constantly. He said some things I knew were true. I was unmoved, except I wish he would go away. And he finally did. And then he says, another came and sat beside me, and he didn't talk. He didn't ask leading questions. He just sat there, you know, by my bedside for an hour or more, listened, and when I said something, he answered briefly. He prayed simply and left. He said, I was moved. I was comforted. I hated to see him go. And so I talked to a friend at my first church that I pastored, and there was one man there who died of cancer, and I was talking to his married son, who was part of my church. And he said, you know, after Dad died, another man in the church who had gone through the same experience, you know, years earlier, you know, with his father dying, and he said, after the funeral, and he said, he took me fishing. You guys would like that, eh? He took me fishing, he said. And it was the best thing to happen to me at that time. And that's what the son said. He said, man, you know what? You know what really helped me? I went out fishing. And so, you know, we have to understand that sometimes we have to be really careful and sensitive. Lord, what do you want me to say? I mean, I appreciate it. And a bunch of you actually came down to Hamilton. That's what, it kind of blew me away, but what on earth? You know, why would they do that, you know? I mean, you know, first I had Larry and Ronnie show up, you know, so I knew then I wasn't in heaven. And, I thought that. was funny. And then Andrew showed up, and they had to take his bow and arrow off him, but we talked about your car, remember that? That's the only thing I remember, that you got the car. And a few others as well, you know, came, and the pastor came by to see me a couple of times. And they were great visits. I mean, you know, I don't think any of you ever tried to give me a sermon or anything, and you didn't kind of, you know, throw your favorite 100 verses at me. And you know what? It was nice to talk. To be quite honest, I was more phased out, you know, because of the drugs they were giving me. So I don't remember everything. Except Larry promised me $50 when I got back, but I never got that yet. But that's what happens, you know, when you can go in and just sit for a short time and just say hi, you know, I'm praying for you, you know, we're thinking of you, you know. And the real question is, you know, how far are we willing to go, and how little are you willing to say for a friend who's suffering? Because a lot of the times we don't really understand, unless you have been through something similar, you know. And that's why some of the things I've gone through in my life, you know, I'm glad God put me through them, because now I can understand what other people are going through when they suffer the same things. Now, we get into a really dicey area here now with Job. And he begins to vent, and it kind of goes into Job 3, but really basically Job chapter 2. So when we read it, he's there, and they start to talk to him,